This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
Folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. We're live here inside the MDN studios. Sam Webb, Mr. Ira Weintraub on the other side of the glass. It is time for the MGo Blog Roundtable. That means Brian Cook is in the house. Brian Cook, good morning. How are you?
I'm well.
You're well?
Well.
All right. That means Ed Fang is in the house. How are you this morning, Ed?
I'm great. I'm so pumped to talk about our U20 World Cup team. They're doing really well. Made the quarters, beat France. So, just excited to talk some soccer.
Sam has no idea what you're talking about.
I agree
with Ed.
Did you see the glazing of my eyes? As she's like,
it's a new era for U.S. soccer.
Dude, these guys play with skill.
Is the team that
the academy era.
The neon green shirt that I wore.
No, USA.
That's a club team.
Okay.
You know, red, white, and blue, Sam. Red, white, and blue. This you should get.
Okay, got it.
Under 20. U20 means under the age of 20
years old. Love it or leave it, Sam.
Okay. There's a World Cup.
Love it or leave it.
I got you. I think I know what you're putting down. By the way, Brian Cook, in case you didn't know, MGo Blog. Ed Fang, in case you didn't know, the Power Rank. And on the phone from Hawaii, our friend Craig Ross. He did not go on a jungle expedition, which is why he's on the phone. Craig, good morning. How are you?
Staying away from the jungle, staying away from the beach. Like Juwan Howard, I don't like the beach, and which is something that he said once. And
I don't like the beach. Why is that so weird?
It's not.
Too much sand and stuff is what he said, and I sort of agree. Thing I was going to ask you, did Cardiff get relegated in the EPL? I'm sure Brian will know this.
Honestly, I don't. I don't follow, like,
they're my team
very much.
Craig, you've been assimilated into the collective, man.
No. He has no idea what we're talking about with international soccer.
I'm just stuck on Craig not liking sand, but he goes to Hawaii all the time and surrounded by sand.
Honestly, that kind of fits in with Craig. Just putting himself in the middle of a bunch of stuff he doesn't actually like.
Right. So, speaking about things you don't like, you specifically, Brian, we had a discussion last week about what the ideal assistant coaching staff would look like, some of the names that we heard. And so Phil Martelli was a name that we discussed last week. And so the debate was about Martelli versus Miller versus Martelli.
Yeah.
Now that we know it's Martelli, I'm curious if you warmed up to the idea of Martelli.
Either one wasn't going to be a disaster. Mm-hmm. And I did go back and look at Martelli's tenure in his last 3 years. Like, they had major season disrupting injuries all 3 years. So he's probably still at St. Joe's if he has a little bit better injury luck, because they were pretty close to the tournament 2 years ago. And then this year, not so much. But I was reading the three-man weave A10 season preview, and they mentioned that, you know, they had like when this guy's on the floor and this guy's on the floor, St. Joe's is really good. And then that guy played 13 games. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little bit concerned that, like, you know, if you go back and you look at his recruiting history, he's never gotten a top 100 player. And he's like in Philly.
But he's at St. Joe's.
He's at St. Joe's.
And that's the thing, is like, what is the level of St. Joe's and where were they? And nobody knows, because he's literally the entire history of the school on KenPom. So it's like, that's the history of St. Joe's. It's the history of Phil Martelli. I don't know. He'll open some doors in Philly. He'll be fine, but I don't think it's a game changer.
What did you think, Craig?
I think in some context it makes sense. I mean, he's been a head coach forever at the NCAA level, and so it gives Juwan something he doesn't have, which is experience at the NCAA level. He has East Coast roots, presumably he has connections in Philadelphia, New York City, and D.C. And I liked what one thing that Martelli said was that he's willing to go fight with his head coach about what he thinks makes sense. But once in close, when the doors are closed, he said, when the doors are open, he's a team guy. And just because he's been a head coach forever doesn't mean he doesn't know how to, you know, be an assistant coach or behave like an assistant coach. So I thought he was pretty candid in his comments, and I did like them. You know, I understand the choice is a sensible choice, but whether this is going to work out, and I include Eisley in this, is very much still to me a low floor, high ceiling deal. I have no idea how this is going to work out. It's clear that they're making decisions that are very different from decisions John Beilein would make. That's not necessarily wrong, but it's a very different direction. But once you guys finish on Martelli and talk about Eisley, I'd like to talk about the big picture of what it looks like to me.
Ed Fang, yeah. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I was high on Martelli last week. I'm even higher on him this week. I think it's a great choice just because this man has experienced everything a college basketball head coach can possibly experience, from the highs of almost making a Final Four, having two NBA players on his team. I mean, actually, my first remembrance of Martelli was when St. Joseph's took Stanford to the brink. Stanford was a one seed. I think St. Joseph's was a nine. It was like 2001. Marvin O'Connor just destroyed Casey Jacobson. But yeah, I think this is a fantastic. I think he can coach. You know, he would still be the coach at St. Joseph's if they hadn't changed their administration, probably, with a new AD and things like that. And, you know, you were looking for a guy with experience, and you have a guy with experience, and the guy has had some very good basketball teams in the past. And, you know, what Brian said about what happened the last couple years just kind of confirms what I thought of him as a coach as well.
Yeah, I think that – so the hire signaled something else to me. You know, the lack of ego, the lack of insecurity for Juwan Howard to hire such a seasoned – and if you listen to Brendan Quinn, it sounds like he knows him – such a, you know, big – personality guy like Phil Martelli. And for me, it wouldn't matter to me if they had, you know, if you could actually see Juwan Howard leaning over and saying, Phil, what should I do? Or you saw some sort of blow up on the side. Because I think that's coaching. I think you see that. I told a story yesterday. I remember vividly a case with Beilein. You won't say the year, but I'll say the team. They were playing Illinois, and Illinois was giving it to them in their man-to-man defense. And so they would switch to zone, had some success, go right back to man-to-man. So I guess you got an idea of what era they were in, where they were playing more man-to-man defense. Right. But still, you know, every time they went man-to-man, Illinois is getting them. And at one point, and I remember vividly watching the exchange on the bench, you know, the assistant and Beilein are kind of going back and forth. And then so Beilein wanted to go man-to-man. At that point, the assistant went, coach him yourself then. Those things happen. My point is, those things happen even on veteran staffs. So to me, if Phil Martelli is you know, has an idea, sees something, if I'm Juwan Howard, tell me, man. Tell me. Behind closed doors or out there on the floor, tell me, because I want us to be right. I think that's where Juwan Howard's coming from.
Yeah, and Martelli should be pretty useful in offense. I think he's, you know, hasn't been able to get teams that can shoot, but he has had low turnover teams, so that's a good fit with the current roster. His defenses are very conservative and a little bit strange, so he's never had really a shot blocker, so it's all about like keeping guys in front of you and not letting them get to the offensive boards and forcing them to shoot over you. But he gives up a ton of threes. So I think St. Joseph's been in the 300s the last 4 years and like the percentage of threes given up. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things where, like, you know, Juwan Howard's a defensive assistant. He's probably better in tune with what you would do with Michigan's personnel, because, you know, Phil Martelli has never seen a John Teske at St. Joe's.
I mean, we've also never seen a John Teske at Michigan either, right?
So, well,
I mean,
he's a special player. Hopefully we're going to continue having Teske players. Yes. At center, so like, you know, I think that he'll slot in as an offensive assistant, and Juwan will probably take the lead on the D.
I mean, it's interesting that you say Martelli is a personality. I don't really think of him as that big a personality.
That's the way Brendan described. But I don't know Phil Martelli, so I can't say.
Well, and the other thing is, like, Juwan Howard doesn't really know him either. No, he met a couple times, and you know, he made the decision that this is a seasoned guy that I can get in here, and he's going to help me. in my first, at least my first couple years as a coach. So I think that says something as well about Howard's thinking.
You're saying, Brian?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Craig.
I was just going to mention that Brian mentioned about Martelli not liking to turn the ball over. And I think actually St. Joe's wasn't a very good team this year. They were actually terrible. But they were number one in the country in on offense on turnovers. They had the best turnover percentage in the country. So he doesn't like to turn it over. On the other hand, they did shoot threes. You know, I wonder how the NCAA is going to look this year in that context, because they just, I think, passed a rule, tell me if I'm wrong, that moves the three-point line back to the international line. Is that right?
That is official, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So that will change the game a bit, I think, how much.
Yeah, absolutely. No.
Last time around, when they moved it back, it didn't seem to change it much. But
well, I mean, that's interesting because the three-point rate is just, I mean, it's gone up a percent every year over the last 5 years. And then this year, the college basketball average, like the shooting percentage, dropped a little bit. So you're probably going to see that again if they moved they moved back the line about a foot? Is that where the international line is?
A little less than a foot and a half. They moved it to 22 and 1 3/4 from 20 feet, 9 inches.
And that's interesting, too, because, I mean, does the corner line go back at all?
That's what we were talking about before. Right. The corner line is the same size all the way around. The corner shrinks.
So I mean, this is going to really benefit teams that play like the Milwaukee Bucks, in that they absolutely don't allow corner threes, but they'll take their chances with below average shooters at the top of the key. I think that's going to be really important heading forward for all college teams, especially with this change.
I mean, they used it in the NIT, and the changes were not major. Like, you know, couple of points at 3-point percentage.
Because the corner three is going to be, in college now, it's going to be a little outside of the corner three in the NBA now, right? Isn't that how it works out?
Yeah, the corner three in the NBA is exactly 22 feet. The college line will be 22 feet, 1 3/4 inches. So I'm just trying to figure out how much space is left in the corner for players to stand just to get the 3-point off without stepping out of bounds.
I think it's 3 feet in the NBA. 3 feet between the line and the...
I mean, that's the most important real estate on a basketball court.
All right. So, Craig, you said you wanted to talk about Howard Eisley.
Yeah. Eisley is, you know, I'm not sure what the deal is there. I mean, you're getting a second NBA guy. I don't know much about Eisley. I know he played at Southwestern with Juwan Howard and Vashon Leonard.
Jalen Rose.
Excuse me?
Jalen Rose, not Juwan Howard.
Yeah, excuse me, Jalen Rose. Thanks. And I know they beat Weber's team when they played in in their senior year. The thing is, I guess when you look at this coaching squad overall, you've got Chicago roots, Detroit roots, Philadelphia roots, and Saadi has recruited in the, you know, in the western part of Michigan, Battle Creek, Grand Rapids. So you sort of covered the bases in terms of recruiting presences, at least with the coaching staff's history. Whether that means anything or not, I don't really know. But it's sure there was a sign yesterday that things are going a different direction when they offered this guy, what's his name, Joshua Christopher, who is a top 10 player. And I don't, you know, and of course Christopher hasn't been to Ann Arbor. Whether he has any mutual interest, I don't know. It's a very different sort of direction than what Beeline would do. And maybe I've told the story once before, but maybe not. It's probably worth re-referencing it. But, Michigan, I asked Picari one day who decides on who they're going to take as a recruit. How do they decide? Or who they'll offer? And he said, everybody decides. I said, what do you mean everybody? He said, well, assistant coaches, staff, D-line, everybody decides. And then he said, if a kid comes in here and is rude to a secretary, and the secretary tells us about it, we're not going to offer that kid. we want kids that come in that fit with our culture, that get along with people here, because we just don't want those problems. This is, you know, so they were very careful. They wouldn't offer until kids showed up. This is a different thing that's going on now. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying it's very different, and it's different than, you know.
Wait, what are you trying to say with the story?
Well, the story is, you know, until now or in the beginning.
Oh, they don't offer until they bring him in. Got it. Okay.
They won't bring, they're not offering until they meet the kid, bring him in. Maybe he's been around the program a bit, and that's clearly changing. So, I'm not saying it's good or bad. I don't know how it'll work out, but it's a different deal.
Yeah, I think, and we touched on this in the recruiting roundup and touched on this yesterday.
Okay.
I think that the ability to get in on guys earlier right away is going to be pronounced. But as time went on with Beeline, I think you could argue that it became less of an issue because people began to understand pretty widely what his process was. So a kid that didn't get offered in his freshman or sophomore year by John Beeline, maybe it was an affront to that young man to not do that early in John Beeline's tenure because there wasn't this, wide recognition of how he does things. But by the time you get to the second half of the John Beeline era, everyone knew. So people started to not take issue with it. Were there guys that, maybe in the latter stages of their recruitment, they were a little limited with because you couldn't really move on them until they got to campus, as past the age mark? Yeah, you can argue that. But I guess for me, it's more about what worked for John Beeline versus what works for Juwan Howard. Juwan Howard doesn't have to have the same process that I know you aren't saying this, Craig. John Beeline didn't have to, or Juwan Howard didn't have to have the same process for John Beeline as John Beeline did, and vice versa. It's why this whole narrative about, hey, we're going to get back to, recruiting big timers. Okay, that's great, but it's not like what John Beeline was doing wasn't working for him. It's working pretty damn well. 7 first-round picks, 2 championship games, Big Ten championships. I mean, how can you complain about that? But now they're going to do things different, which is fine. Let's see if this way works. Hopefully it will. And come to find out with this Christensen kid, I wonder, too, is there some sort of connection? And it sounds like from what I've gathered, that's a Juwan Howard deal. With dad, where there is some connection between the two. This is not a total shot in the dark on this young man, and there is some interest. So we'll have more on that a little bit later. But we need to get to a break. Come back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA The Ticket. And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. We are live here inside the MDN studio. So I want to switch gears a bit, guys, and talk about the curious case of one Mr. Oliver Martin, the wide receiver who is now transferring from the University of Michigan. And I say curious case because of the winding road, over the last couple of days. So in case you missed it, and I guess I can show you guys this. But so word started coming out from the program last week from some of the guys that, hey, Oliver Martin is looking to transfer because they speculated that he was looking to transfer because he wasn't there, back.
Right.
Yeah, he wasn't back with the rest of the team. It's so like, hey, it's looking like he wants to transfer. So, he did some reaching around, called, got Allen on the job. We both reached out to Iowa City, made some calls here around town. The word was they expect him. He's expecting to go back. They're expecting him back. That he's out because he had some things to think about. Didn't pass along what those things were. We can speculate what those things were, but he had some things to think about. So, fast forward to Sunday. So, Josh Gattis is out at the Best of the Midwest camp. He leaves early from the Best of the Midwest camp. Comes back early from the Best of the Midwest camp to meet with Oliver Martin.
Oh.
All right, and so meets with Oliver Martin. Word was, Allen reported this on the site. I heard the same thing. But Allen was like, man, I heard he killed his workout. So he kills his workout. And then later on that night, you see the photo that he tweets out, that Gattis tweets out and says, hey, the wide receiver crew, who's prominent in the picture?
Oliver Martin.
And so at which point, highlight, I certainly was one that highlighted it too. Hey, Oliver Martin is with the crew. At which point, Nico Collins is like, hey, of course he's with the crew. He's our brother. I was like, look, hold on, man. I'm not saying that he's not with the crew. I'm not the one saying that. No, you don't have to tell me. Right? And so at that point, all indications he had given was that he was going to stay. Right? The next couple of days, they don't see him again. And then yesterday, he's in the portal. So my response to that whole thing was if things were that volatile and the uncertainty was that pronounced that it would, you could have a conversation, you can work out with the team, you can go out, everything's good. And then literally the next day, you must be thinking something else again. 2 days later, you're out. This is the best. And this is not diminishing his talent. This is not me saying, you know, he doesn't have talent, so he's no loss. I'm not saying that. I'm saying if he was, you know, his status here was that fragile, you're better off just parting ways right now. I mean, it's the best thing for both sides.
I guess. I mean, the only thing I think is, you know, Michigan's gotten some guys out of here in 3 years with a degree.
Yeah.
So,
I can tell you this. So you've seen his trainer be very, very vocal on Twitter.
Yeah.
That was a point that his trainer was hit. I mean, he was all over it and thought that that's what he was going to do.
Yeah. Because then you can see like how the NFL impacts the receiving core next year and what your spot on the depth chart is. And seems a little premature to me, but.
Yeah, I guess the only one that would really be able to speak to what's making him tick here is him. Because he's.
Yeah.
Anyone you talk to, from his trainer to when we've talked to, you know, he had a trainer here in Michigan that he worked with, and Reggie Wins, a 707 coach here in Michigan, and Reggie Wins, his trainer down in Iowa City, who that's the guy who you've seen being really active on Twitter, who is, you know, really kind of laying out everything that was, you know, was going on down there in Iowa City. And then, of course, you get things from up here in Michigan, from guys on the team, from guys on the staff. We know what they were thinking. Like, okay. You know, and the idea was, hey, you know what? Josh Gattis is here. A lot is going to be different. At least try it out. If you still don't like it, guess what? You got your degree in 3 years. Boom. You're set.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what,
I mean, did
what
you guys,
it was in the last couple of days that make him say, Sundays was the swan song.
Well, I mean, did you guys see him cracking the top three of the receiver corps this year?
Here's what I was told about Oliver Barton in spring. There's no question that Mike Sainristal came in and blew up. I think Mikey Sainristal surprised even them with how quickly he progressed, right? So he, when it came to, you know, big practices, big plays, he was probably the most explosive guy in the spring. But in terms of consistency from practice one to the final practice, it's Oliver Martin.
Yeah, I mean, I've always liked his talent. I was big on him when Michigan was recruiting him. There was like that period where it looked like they weren't going to have room, and I was pretty broken up about that. And I was really glad they managed to get him in the class. And to lose him probably right before he becomes the final form is pretty disappointing.
Yeah, and so I mean, I'm one of those that says you just hope he finds a place where, you know, he can land on his feet, and it's everything he wants it to be. And meanwhile, for Michigan, it's one of those things where, you know, what may be, you know, is perceived as a distraction is no longer one. But so you can see the date when the speculation started. This was before it hit the internet.
Yeah, I know.
So I mean, so you know that guys were thinking it. And you saw the chain of events of how things broke down or how things unfolded from there. And so, you know, what are you going to do?
I remember I got a very good tip that Sam McGuffey was going to leave the program way back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I reported it. And then Sam McGuffey had like a week-long period of wavering where my ass was just in the wind. And like, you know, I don't have the track record that you do. So like if I get something wrong at that juncture, I'm just like a dead man. And I'm like, I never want to do any of this again. And just the volatile nature of reporting on what people are deciding to do is brutal.
Well, so my process with this was reporting what was happening as it was happening, as opposed to predicting
right.
what the young man was going to do. I didn't make a prediction. I didn't say, hey, this guy is going to say this is what's happening. He's supposed to come back Sunday. He's supposed to meet with Gaddis Sunday. They expect him to stay. We will find out if he does after the fact. Hey, he killed a workout. Hey, he went out with the coaches, or he went out with the receivers. Based on what he's saying right now, barring a 180, he's going to stay. And then next thing you know, he
180.
180. There you go.
I mean,
or he could have just not told him the truth. I mean, there's that. Maybe he didn't change his mind and just, you know, thinking he was going to leave all along and just didn't tell him. Nah. He could have lied. There's that possibility.
I mean, I got a tip halfway through the season that Aubrey Solomon was going to transfer. This is when he was injured and wasn't playing. He hadn't played yet. And I was like, and then he got on the field. And I was like, this tip is stupid. Who is this guy? Why is he? And like, he's actually a guy who's given me a significant amount of stuff. And I was like, oh, this guy sucks now. And then Aubrey Solomon transferred. And I was like, oh, well, good thing I didn't tell him he sucks, except now. But you don't suck because
right. You know, people, they conflate reporting with predicting, and they aren't the same thing. They are not the same thing. And in this case, I mean, even if you want to give this ingrate on Twitter credit for predictions,
I'm not an ingrate.
He isn't even making predictions based on his own information.
No,
I mean he's half Alex Jones, you know, half pilferer. You know, he makes up half his information, steals the other half, and then takes credit for it on Twitter. And you got, you know, the champion of people, which I get. There are a lot of folks that don't want to, they want their information for free. And so he feeds that beast. I get it. But let's not make this, let's not assign credibility to a guy who has none. You know, as I said on the site, he is Ms. Cleo dressed up like Morton Downey Jr. That's this guy. That's this guy that people are suddenly assigning credibility to. Now, we could go on because I would ask some questions as you look who you assign credibility to. You can check out very easily. I mean, we see some things online about, you know, his conduct with people of African-American persuasion. We see his conduct with student athletes. We see his conduct with the Michigan football program and how they've, from a university perspective, disavowed. And we see all of these things.
Threatened to beat up my aunts.
It'd be very easy to see if he has a criminal history, right? You could search those things, right? It'd be very easy to check on how successful his business actually is. you could find these things out, right? You could look that up. These things are public record, right? So you would be able to see things. You'd be able to find out if he has, you know, certain things that are hanging over his head right now. You could find these things out if you really, really want to search, if you really, really want to dig. And it's not slander if it's true. I mean, if you could actually put documentation of these things on the internet for everyone to see, you could literally de-pants this person.
You could,
and it would not be anything that you would have to worry about because it's true. It's not slander if it's true, right, Mr. Weintraub?
That is correct.
So
you should ask Craig; he's the lawyer.
You can lay for a bear exactly what level of fraud this individual is, because I mean we have the fraud type that you can see that it's just con man stuff, but we could actually see if he's a criminal fraud. We could actually see if he's defrauding the government. We could see these things if you really want to search. I'm just asking the question. You guys are quiet here.
Why
did it get quiet all of a sudden?
Hey, do I speak up in church? No, Sam. I let the man talk.
I'm just asking questions.
It just felt
that's all
like,
I'm doing. I'm just asking like, questions.
You know, you don't interrupt someone during a speech.
I'm asking you guys questions. That's
okay.
What I was doing.
I'm not
giving a speech.
I cannot disagree with anything that you said, Sam.
Oh.
Yes, sir.
I would love to, though. I would love to. If that's where we got to go, I would love to go there. Let's go there. Please. Invite me. Just do this for me. Ask me if I have any information on you being a criminal. Ask ask me if I have any information on you defrauding the government. And then I can answer those questions. And I can answer them definitively. All right? So let's do that. Please, let's go there.
All right, Craig, there we go. How you doing, Craig, in Hawaii?
All right. I have no, I mean, I have a vague idea what you're talking about, but if you want me to ask you about this,
no, I'm just throwing it out there into the atmosphere. And I wasn't asking you that question, Craig. I was throwing that out there in the atmosphere to a person it might apply to. So
I resent all these implications. I have never once criminally trespassed.
Yeah, you know, the back to Oliver Martin. I mean, if the kid is unhappy, he's unhappy, and, you know, he needs to do something else. But, you know, I don't quite get it. He'll sit out a year, I assume.
Well, you never know these days.
Well, I assume in this case he's sitting out a year, and then he'll have two to play. Meanwhile, he would play this year. I think he would see more playing time this year than he has the last two. And then next year, my guess is DPJ and Nico are both in the NFL. And so he'll have 2 years to, you know, to be a primary player on the team. So I don't quite get it. From his point of view, unless he's just miserable or unhappy, if he's miserable or unhappy, he should make the move. If he's not, it's not logical at all to me. But
maybe he misses Pizza Ranch.
That's all I see.
What? What did you say?
Pizza Ranch. They have a restaurant in Iowa called Pizza Ranch, and it's a pizza place. And I don't know why they have ranch. It's just not like. Like, oh, we're like the cowboy pizza place. Maybe he just likes that a lot.
Okay, I'm speculating. You were speculating. I can speculate, too.
I gotcha. It is 9:44 on a Thursday morning. We do have phone lines are open, by the way. 734-998-1050. If you want to get in, we got plenty of time to do that. We'll be back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA The Ticket. Brian, and I got an email yesterday. I don't know if you listened yesterday, but I got an email from a friend out west who was looking to go to Michigan, UCLA, out of UCLA.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, he helped with tickets. And I was like, I don't know. See, he said, because, man, I don't think I'm going to be able to get tickets through Michigan because they gave their allotment back. I was like, what are you talking about? Sent me a link to your message board.
What? I don't put everything on that message board.
I know you did. But sent me a link to the message board that it was like maybe a misunderstanding of how things work.
Yeah.
The assumption was that Michigan had an allotment of tickets, after they fulfilled the family and friends needs, that they gave the rest back to UCLA. And it's like, this doesn't sound like a bowl game like scenario where you get like, you know,
17,000 tickets.
Yeah, you get half the allotment, they get half the allotment. It's a home game for UCLA, but maybe my understanding of regional action in baseball is, I mean, it was speculative. So I asked Ira. So Ira, you know, you do the call for Michigan baseball. How does it work? He said it's a home game for UCLA. So you get your friends and family allotment like you do when you go on the road in football. You don't get, you know, however many tickets for your fans. If your fans want to buy tickets to watch a game at Ohio State, they got to go through the ticket office to do it. So now, bowl game is different. Bowl game is different. You get an allotment for your school, and you can go through your school to buy them. But Ira Weintraub, when it comes to going on the road to Penn State,
this is not a neutral site game. This is a road game.
It's a road game.
The only sport that you get a fan allotment of tickets on the road is football. No other sport gets fan allotment of tickets other than the family and friends that are directly related to the team.
So when you go on the road for baseball at Penn State, you don't get.
You have to buy tickets at Penn State through Penn State.
You don't get like a quarter allotment.
Correct. Right. You get just the family seats, yes.
So there you go. You know, it's not like a bowl game is the point. So this was not a situation where they gave a bunch of tickets back it's not like you'd be saving money because these aren't tickets that you bought I was just looking at the upside. What would the upside for Michigan be for giving tickets back?
No, I that's probably just someone in the ticket office having a communications issue with somebody.
Probably so. So, but it gets us to a Herculean comeback when you consider the circumstances for the Michigan baseball program. I mean, guys, epic collapse. I'm putting it mildly, according to Eric Backich. He said it was worse than an epic collapse. Being up 7-4 heading into the ninth inning and losing 11-7 like they did on Sunday.
Well, that game was particularly bad because they got a great start as they did in all the games there, but they gave up 6 walks, 2 hit batters, and a pass ball in the last 2 innings, and they hit off the handle that somehow floated over the first baseman's head. So it was, you know, a complete meltdown by the Michigan relievers, but, you know, they came back in the last game, and these long series in college, you'll see teams just run out of pitching, and you saw that with Creighton. I mean, they were completely on fumes, and their guys in the last game couldn't throw strikes at all, and when they did, the ball got hammered. So it was even though Michigan was down in that game 4-1, Creighton had come back with a starter who had pitched in their first game, and he didn't have a lot of juice left, and he got through a couple innings, but then it collapsed on him. It's a huge win for Michigan to make the Super Regionals with. It's a completely big deal. They have a really nice team. They've got 3 terrific starters, and the format at UCLA tends to work for them because they have 3 starters, and the most they're going to have is 3 games, and they've got a really they've got a good offense. They beat UCLA. People may not know earlier in the year.
Yeah.
But UCLA is the number one team in the country, and you're playing at UCLA, so you never know what happens. But it's already been a huge accomplishment for this team. I think they're 43-19, something like that. So it's been a quite good.
You mentioned Craig, and I want to put this question to all you guys before we get out of here, because you interact with Michigan fans and kind of have a feel for the pulse. I thought the victory was huge because of the circumstance that they came back from an epic, you know, fail and got up off the mat and made the regional. But does making the super, or they won the regional, does winning the super regional move the meter as far as the perception of the baseball program, as far as the perception of Eric Backich when you guys, you know, in your dealings with Michigan fans, or maybe in your own eyes? Or is it the Super Regional? Is that the bar now for them? What would you say?
Go ahead, Craig.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I mean, what, you know, we've talked about it in the deep past. What moves the bar for Michigan is playing baseball in the summer. and not playing baseball in the winter. And, you know, and so I don't get it. I mean, Bill Martin got it, but, you know, and told me he was going to do some, you know, I don't even understand why we're playing baseball in February and March. It makes no sense. And I have season tickets to baseball, and you get to, you know, how enthusiastic am I to bundle up like in the nook of the north and go over to Fisher and watch a game, because that's what it's been like for years over there. Now you're lucky if you get 2 or 3 games in good weather. And I think the attitude of Michigan fans and baseball fans in the Midwest will change when the schools in the North and the Northeast say, we don't care about this. We're going to play games in the summer. It is called the summer game, and that's when we'll play it. And if the NCAA doesn't want to go along, let them go their own direction.
You got West Coast teams, you got Southern teams.
Right.
Why would they want to change the current format?
That's right. They wouldn't. And so let them do their own thing and let the teams. You use wooden bats, which will change things right away because the scouts hate that. you go to Wooden Bats. All the kids are playing in the summer anyway, either in Cape Cod or someplace else. Kids are then in school, you know, and don't have to be traveling all over the place. They can actually go to school and then play baseball in the summer. When they're out of school, you can run bus league. It'll be cheaper. The expenses for baseball and softball are unbelievable because you got kids on the road all the time in February and March. You know, the current structure makes no sense. Why the northern schools and the eastern schools, you know, go along with it, I have no idea. Since, you know, the point of baseball is to play, and when it's hot, they could even make money. You sell beer, you play at night when it's hot, when other games aren't going on, you're not bumping heads with other sports, and all of a sudden now you're making money. Nothing that's going on here makes any sense. And the fact that Michigan has had a great team this year, and who knows, maybe they'll even make the World Series, it just doesn't change anything for me, because you're never going to have interest with fans until you're actually playing in weather where fans will go to games. So I guess
this is right. I guess this is a conversation for another day. So do you have the same feeling about softball?
I'm sorry. Would you do the same thing in softball? Why not? Yeah, why not?
Because you have extreme interest in softball, and you know they play basically the same time in softball too,
and but again, you're still playing in bad weather a lot, and so I don't get it. These games weren't made to be played in the snow and sleet. And so to me, it makes no sense. Now, at least in softball, you know, a couple of teams from the north have been able to compete now and again, but, you know, it's not a sensible system.
All right, that'll do it for today's show. Always fun when the fellas show up for the MGO Blog Roundtable. We appreciate you. Got to get out of here.